Well, I guess we better go ahead and get started here. Tonight, as we continue in our study of the book of Isaiah, we're ready to begin in the 36th chapter of Isaiah. Now, the next four chapters, chapters 36, 37, 38, and 39, constitute a little separate division of the book of Isaiah, what some of the commentators call the historical section of the book. And that is that these four chapters deal with the specific occasion of the siege and attack of Jerusalem by Sennacherib and his army from Assyria. Accounts of this are also found in 2 Kings chapter 17 through 20, and also in 2 Chronicles chapter 32. The account in 2 Chronicles chapter 32 is written in a different fashion and obviously is written by a different author. But the account in 2 Kings chapter 17 through 20 is very closely related to this account given in Isaiah 36 through 39. And so it's led to speculation as to whether or not Isaiah maybe borrowed the account from 2 Kings and put into his prophecy, or whether the writer of 2 Kings borrowed Isaiah's and put in his, or whether it was written by the same person. Or maybe the account in 2 Kings was originally written by Isaiah and added into 2 Kings by the writer of 2 Kings. But another possibility here is simply the fact that if the Holy Spirit inspired these people to give this prophecy, then the Holy Spirit could have had him to write it any way that he wanted to, and he could have had two writers to write very similarly. The account in 2 Kings is more detailed than Isaiah gives, but that is not a usual thing for the Holy Spirit to cause two writers to write identically. Usually the style of writers is distinct, even though their prophecy is inspired by the Holy Spirit. But to me, when I see accounts that are identical or very similar, it just further substantiates to me that this whole Bible comes from a common source, and that it's not something that was made up by man, or it would have conflicts and differing accounts that you could not reconcile. In 2 Chronicles 32, verse 32, he makes a statement there that I think is very appropriate as we begin this study. Now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah and his goodness, behold, they are written in the vision of Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, and in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. So this writer of Chronicles refers to Isaiah to get more information about the deeds of Hezekiah. And so he has to be referring to this section of Isaiah that we're in now, chapters 36 through 39. And so I just wanted to point out that the book of Chronicles recognized Isaiah's writings here as being a valid account of the things that happened to Hezekiah. Well, let's look just for a moment at some of the background here. We wonder why, maybe, that other great events are not concentrated on by Isaiah rather than this besiege of Jerusalem by Sennacherib and the army from Assyria. But this was an event that happened during Isaiah's time. It was an event that's fairly well documented, so that not only do we have the prophecy, but we have the result and see that the prophecy was fulfilled in every detail. And quite possibly it is an outstanding enough of an event and a well-known event that Isaiah could use it as a prime vehicle for giving a lot of his prophecy, and the people would have an event they were familiar enough with to make a close attachment. And And as we know, we've had several accounts now that have pointed to and dealt with some of this activity of Sennacherib as he besieged the city of Jerusalem. But we're going to get it more detailed now in the next four chapters. Verse 1, now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the defensed cities of Judah and took them. The 14th year of King Hezekiah. Hezekiah began his reign somewhere around 725 B.C. Some say 726, some say 723 or 22. And so you subtract 14 years from that, and that puts you somewhere around the year 710 to 712 B.C. I believe Mr. Barnes said 79. So in the year 79 B.C., which would have been the 14th year of the reign of Hezekiah, the king, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the defensed cities of Judah and took them. Sennacherib reigned a shorter time. We're not sure exactly how long he did reign, but he'd been in his reign a few years at this time. And I'd like to read a few paragraphs from Mr. Barnes to give us some background as to what is happening historically at this time. The immediate occasion of this war against Judah was the fact that Hezekiah had shaken off the yoke of Assyria by which his father Ahaz and the nation had suffered so much under Tiglath-Pileser, or Shalmaneser, according to 2 Kings 18 and 7. To reduce Judea again to subjection, as well as to carry his conquest into Egypt, appears to have been the design of this celebrated expedition. He ravaged the country, took the strong towns and fortresses, and prepared then to lay siege to Jerusalem itself. Hezekiah, however, as soon as the army of Sennacherib had entered Judea, prepared to put Jerusalem into a state of complete defense. At the advice of his counselors, he stopped the waters that flowed in the neighborhood of the city, and that might furnish refreshment to a besieging army, built up the broken walls, enclosed one of the fountains within a wall, and prepared shields and darts in abundance to repel the invader. Now, this is found in 2 Chronicles 22, verses 2 through 5. Sennacherib, seeing that all hope of easily taking Jerusalem was taken away, apparently became inclined to hearken to terms of accommodation. Hezekiah sent to him to propose peace and to ask the conditions on which he would withdraw his forces. He confessed his error in not paying the tribute stipulated by his father and his willingness to pay now what should be demanded by Sennacherib. Sennacherib demanded 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. This was paid by Hezekiah by exhausting the treasury and by stripping even the temple of his gold. This is found in 2 Kings 18, 13 through 16. It was evidently understood in this treaty that Sennacherib was to withdraw his forces and return to his own land. But this treaty he ultimately disregarded. This is found in chapters 33, verse 8. He seems, however, to have granted Hezekiah some respite and to have delayed his attack on Jerusalem until he returned from Egypt. This war with Egypt, he prosecuted at first with great success and with a fair prospect of the conquest of that country. But having laid siege to Pelusium, and having spent much time before it without success, he was compelled at length to raise the siege and to retreat. Terhaka, king of Ethiopia, having come to the aid of Sevetius, the reigning monarch of Egypt, and advancing to the relief of Pelusium, Sennacherib was compelled to raise the siege and retreat to Judea. Here, having taken Lachish, and disregarding his compact with Hezekiah, he sent an army to Jerusalem under Rabshakeh to lay siege to the city. This is the point in the history of Sennacherib to which the passage before us refers. So here we are now. Hezekiah has broken their yoke that Assyria had upon them by refusing to pay the tribute that Ahaz had pledged. Sennacherib is retaliating. And so, in order to try to make peace. Hezekiah did pay him some more tribute. He robbed the temple, and this kind of puts the attack off a little while, and Sennacherib went on down into Egypt. He did what he could in Egypt. Now he's on his way back from Egypt, and he's laying siege in a town called Lachish, which is in the southeast corner of Judea. It's on the road to Gaza, the best I can make out on the map, and there's no modern-day city that fills its place today. And while he's laying siege to this city of Lachish, he sends Rabshakeh up to Jerusalem to try to go ahead and persuade Hezekiah to give up. So that's where we are right now. Rabshakeh is going to be coming and talking to the representatives of the government of Hezekiah right up next to the wall of Jerusalem. So it says he came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. That is, the major cities outside of Jerusalem itself, those that were defensed, the army of Assyria took them. And as we read, you know, in Hezekiah, we could read where he passed this city and that city. We read it in Isaiah. He took the various cities, and as he was just closing in on Jerusalem. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem. You know, we just mentioned that. Rabshakeh was his representative, probably one of the generals of his army, and he probably had a large portion of the army with him at this time. From Lachish, the little city that was under besiege now by the army of Assyria, to Jerusalem, under King Hezekiah with a great army. We don't know how much of an army he had, because another passage in Chronicles tells us that Sennacherib had a large force with him while he was at Lachish. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the Fuller's Field. Now there was a pool there on the outskirts of Jerusalem known as the upper pool, another one known as the lower pool. And there's pages and pages written about trying to describe these pools, but that's not necessary. And the word conduit means a pipe that would conduct water. And this was conducting water out of the pool into the city or down to another pool as a storage place. And there was no true river identified to feed these pools, but they probably were fed either by springs or by the rainy season. So this was a well-known place, this conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the Fuller's Field. Now, Fuller's Field was a place where the people who made the wool came and dyed and bleached their cloth, and it was an appropriate place to have it by this pool because they needed a lot of water to carry this out. So apparently there was the Fuller's Field where these people worked with the cloth, and then there was the pool, and there was a highway that seemed to run between the two of them, the highway of the Fuller's Field. So this is where Rabshakeh came to talk, by the conduit of the upper pool, in the highway of the Fuller's Field. And everybody, I'm sure, in the vicinity of Judea would know where this exact spot was. Then came forth unto him Eliakim, Hilkiah's son, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, Asaph's son, the recorder. Now Isaiah makes some specific effort here to identify these men. This person named Eliakim, he is discussed in Isaiah 22, verses 20 through 25, and in that chapter, we're told that he would be given head over the house. And certainly he was, and what this simply means is that he was one of the high up in authority of the house of Hezekiah. Might have even been second in command to Hezekiah. Shebna was known as the scribe, and the word scribe here means secretary. And in that same 22nd chapter of Isaiah, he tells us that Eliakim would supersede Shebna. Now, whether this is the same Shebna or not, we don't know. Whether that Shebna in Isaiah 22 was completely deposed and run out of authority, or whether he was relegated to a lesser position known as secretary, it's only speculation. And then Joah, Asaph's son, the recorder. And the word recorder means the chronicler, or that is the one who cared for or stored the records. So this was a pretty high up official meeting now. It'd be like this nation sending the Secretary of State and a few ambassadors over to talk with one of the big wheels in Russia, and they'd have a lot of authority, and that's what happened right here.